All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I am Mike Hevekin, and I am the Chief Justice. And now, by order of seniority, as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
I am Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friday.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case of the day is State versus Aldana Cardenas. Mr. Porta, good morning, and Mr. Lewis, good morning. Do either of you have questions before we begin? Then, Mr. Porta, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Mark Porto. I'm here today representing my client, Rodney Aldana Cardenas. This is an appeal from the district court's denial of Mr. Aldana's motion to transfer the case to the juvenile court. Just a brief recitation of the facts. Obviously this is unusual. It's an interlocutory appeal. These facts are not conceded. Mr. Aldana vehemently maintains his innocence. But for the purposes of argument, what is understood is that this involves an incident that occurred at a park over the noon hour, the lunch hour of the Grand Island Senior High School. Mr. Aldana and the alleged victim and a group of other children went to a park. There was testimony from the law enforcement investigator that the alleged victim did acknowledge that she and Mr. Aldana went back to a vehicle and were kissing on a consensual basis. But at some point she indicated that she told Mr. Aldana to stop and he did not, hence the first degree sexual assault allegation. Obviously, a motion to transfer was filed at the time that Mr. Aldana was 17 years of age, and that was denied by the district court. I want to touch on first the jurisdictional issue that the state has brought up, and my understanding is that the state's argument essentially is that because the definition of a juvenile in 43-245-11 is a person under the age of 18, and then 43-247-2 states that the district or the juvenile court has jurisdiction over any juvenile, so a person under age 18, who has committed a felony. The argument then, as I understand it, is that only a person under the age of 18 is eligible to have a case transferred from the criminal court to the juvenile court. But where I think the state runs astray is its failure into account a couple of other statutes. One is 43-247-12, which states that, first of all, it says that the juvenile court has jurisdiction over any individual. It doesn't use the word juvenile in that subsection of jurisdiction, who is adjudged to be within the provision of this section until the individual reaches the age of majority, so the age of 19. Furthermore, 29-18-60, which is the transfer statute, states that the accused, and that statute uses the term accused, may move to transfer if the individual was 17 years of age or younger at the time of the offense. So the reference to the time of the offense in that statute would seem to indicate that those who are older than 17 but still within the jurisdictional confines, so for instance somebody 18, would still be eligible for a transfer.
I beg your pardon, under 29-18-16, the language is under 18 at time of offense?
17. I can't remember if it's under 18 or 17, but one of those two. At the time, but it references, the important thing is that it references the time of the offense.
Thank you.
This issue's come up a couple different times. There's two cases from this court that I think are that the state references, and that's Pauley and Parks. Those are completely inapplicable to the case at hand. In both of those scenarios, the defendant was over the age of 19, so outside of any conceivable jurisdictional component of the juvenile court at the time the information was even filed.
So the juvenile court would have the ability with this case to provide some type of services?
Yes, under 243-247-12 until the age of 19.
What is your client's age now?
He is 18 now. He turned 18 in March, which was after the information was filed, after the motion to transfer was filed, after the motion to transfer was decided. He only now is 18 after the case went up on appeal.
Let me see what our choices are here, because I think that matters. And we've got a lot of statutes that use mm-hmm. words like individual or under 18 or right. juvenile, which is a defined term, right? And we're trying to make them all sensible.
Right.
Right? So some of our choices may be at the time of the offense or the time of the charge or the time of the motion to transfer or the time of the transfer order is issued and then even on appeal, right? Mm-hmm. Which one do you pick?
I pick at the time of the filing of the information if the person is still within the age of 18.
Within 18, do it again.
Okay, under 19, I guess I should say.
Under 19 at time of charge.
Well, at least at the time of the decision on the transfer motion. At the time the person would enter juvenile court, they need to be under the age of 19.
And Pauley, didn't we say that the jurisdiction was based on the age at the time charged?
Well, yes, but again, in that situation, the Pauley was over 19 at the time of the charge, so there was just no...
But that was a statement of law.
That was...
What's good about it or bad about it?
Well, it renders language in 29-18-16 moot, which is a kind of fundamental rule of statutory construction.
But is 29-18-16 a jurisdictional statute, or that's the arraignment statute, right?
It is not a jurisdictional statute. It's the motion to transfer statute, subsection... Right. Two, but it says, you know, that the accused may move to transfer if they were 17 at the time of the offense. But in addition, 43-247-12, which is a jurisdictional statute, provides jurisdiction over an individual, not a juvenile, an individual.
Isn't it an individual, a judge to be within this section? And so then wouldn't that refer up to the statutes above that do use the term juvenile?
I don't believe so. I don't believe that that's the only way that one can be a judge to be within the section. Another way that one can be a judge to be within the section is if there's a transfer from adult court to juvenile court. And to that point, I want to stress 29-18-16 subsection 3B says that if there is a transfer granted from the district court or county court to the juvenile court, the complaint, indictment, or information may be used in place of a petition. So this is a transfer. This is not a new action. This is a transfer. And the use of the information in lieu of a new juvenile petition would, I believe, clearly support the notion that this is just a continuation of juvenile court proceedings that started at the filing of the information. And so
In adult court.
Right, but this is the arraignment and advisement of transfer.
No,
the statute in general, 29-18-16.
You're correct, yes.
Okay, and it's sub 2, it says at the time of the arraignment, county court or district court shall advise the accused if the accused was younger than 18 at the time of the alleged offense was committed.
Correct.
That you have an opportunity to seek a transfer.
Correct.
Okay, so it's not always a sensible statute. Say that, quote, crime is at age 16 and you eventually find the individual at 21 and he, she presents in the court at 21 and they say, oh, you can file a transfer motion. Not going to work, right?
Correct. I mean, that, but that person is Pauly or Parks. That person is not Aldana, because Aldana was still within the jurisdictional confines of 43.247.12.
At what moment?
At every relevant point. At the time.
Until this passage of time during the appeal.
Well, no, even now, because he's still under 19. So 43.247.12 provides jurisdiction through the age of majority, which is 19. Continuing.
So you have to be in juvenile court, then the juvenile court could continue.
Well, that's open to interpretation, because okay. It says that any individual adjudged to be within the provision of this section. So I understand Justice Papik's point, which is, you know, that could mean a judge to have been a person under 43.245.11, which is a person under 18 in conjunction with 247.2. But it could also mean, and I think it's a reasonable inference, and it would have the added benefit of not having to it would provide a sensible construction of all of these statutes for 43.247.12. To provide the jurisdictional vehicle for a person who committed a crime when they were 17 but has since turned 18 for the court to provide juvenile jurisdiction under that subsection. And that's essentially what the Court of Appeals said in the Burris case.
Before your time completely goes away, do you want to talk about the merit?
I do. I don't have much time at all, but I just would stress a couple of different things. The district court seemed to place the burden of proof onto Aldana as opposed to the state in a number of instances, and just had a degree of cynicism.
Who has the burden of proof in this situation?
Well, the state. The statute is clear that the court shall remove a case from the district court to the juvenile court unless a sound basis for retention exists.
So there's a presumption of transfer.
There's a presumption of transfer. And furthermore, and this is, I'm out of time, if I may just continue just to make this final
point. You may.
Okay. This entire case should be viewed through the prism of 43.246.3, which states that the juvenile code is to be construed so as to remove juveniles who are within the Nebraska juvenile code from the criminal justice system whenever possible, and to reduce the possibility of their committing future law violations through the provisions of social and rehabilitative services to such juveniles and their families. This is a 17-year-old, never been in trouble before, one-time offense, a language barrier between them. This is a perfect candidate to go into the juvenile court.
What do we do about the passage of time since the motion to transfer was filed? I mean, it seems like a lot of the district court's analysis was there's not much time left. Well, now there's even less time left. And so even if we were to find that the district court erred at the time, what do we do about they're not that the clock has continued to run?
May I answer that question?
You can.
Okay. I understand that concern. It's very unfortunate. But what was undisputed from both the evidence from the Hope Spoke Rehabilitation Facility and the probation officer is that the treatment programs can be expedited in order to complete the process within the jurisdictional confines of the juvenile court. If this court renders a decision quickly, there is still time for Mr. Aldana to complete this program.
Were there any evaluations done regarding his risk to reoffend or need for treatment or things of that nature?
May I answer that question?
You may.
Okay. There were not. And to be candid, part of that is the length of time it takes to get that evaluation done. We didn't have that time to spend. But to the extent that that was a concern for the district court, that should have been a failure proof by the state. Why is that the obligation of the defendant? If the state wants to charge a 17-year-old with a crime that could leave him a sex offender for life, it's not too much to expect the state to present that kind of evidence, not the defendant.
I realize your client is denying allegations, so I'm speaking on a hypothetical. If one in your client's situation with regard to age were adjudicated in juvenile court in such a manner and went to go through the treatment, but as often happens, treatment doesn't go as planned. You can't get it done within the time frame, or there's hiccups that come up, and he can't successfully complete it within the time frame that's there. how does this work out? Because at 19, he's done. There's no more juvenile court jurisdiction.
I would concede that that is a legitimate area of concern. But sometimes you have to take a chance. I mean, you always take it. Anytime there's a transfer from a criminal case to a juvenile case, you're somewhat taking a chance on a young person. But we should. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Lewis, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is Mr. Aldona Cardenas' interlocutory appeal related to his motion to transfer his case to juvenile court. The sole error in this was that the District Court of Hall County erred by denying that motion to transfer. In the state's brief, I addressed this claim, but also raised another potential issue, asking this court for guidance in the jurisdictional matters that was discussed with opposing counsel. In short, the state believes that perhaps the remedy that Mr. Cardenas asked for here, the overturning of the district court's denial of his transfer motion, is rendered moot by his age. The language contained in 29, 18, 16, 43, 245, and 43, 247. 43, 247 states that the juvenile court shall have jurisdiction over any juvenile who commits a felony and was at least 11 years old at the time the act was committed. 43, 245 in turn defines a juvenile as any person under the age of 18. 29, 18, 16 provides that the accused may be arraigned in county court or district court if the accused was 18 years of age or older when the alleged offense was committed. If the accused was younger than 18 years of age and was 14 years of age or older when the alleged offense was punishable as a Class 1, 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, 2, or 2A felony. 29, 18, 16 also provides that when the accused is younger than 18 years of age when an alleged offense was committed, the county court or city attorney shall proceed under 247. The two cases that the state points out in its bypass petition and also in its brief are Pauley and Burris, which opposing counsel spoke of. And admittedly, there's certain elements of those cases that don't necessarily speak to this case. And Parks is another good example of facts that aren't exactly congruous to what's going on here. I believe that Parks, I think, was 24 at the time that he was charged, versus in this case where you have a 17 at the age that it was charged. But it sort of sets in motion a bit of logic for when exactly the court would look at, a district court would look at.
Just to interrupt, am I correct in Pauley, the individual is charged at age 21?
Yes.
Okay. So
right.
Much hope of going to juvenile court.
No, and I guess I'm not necessarily saying that this is a black and white sort of issue. I think that this is a close call. It's just one that I've seen multiple times. I know that our office has seen a bunch of times where you have somebody that's coming in at the cusp, and you get into this question based on the statutory language, which is confusing at least, maybe even inconsistent, and has been inconsistently interpreted by different district courts and also sometimes in the appellate setting, about the maintenance and continuing of jurisdiction past the age of 18 versus the ability to gain jurisdiction past the age of 18.
So what is your position?
Well, I think that the statutes suggest to me, and I think that a number of people that I've consulted in the office are giving a similar read, that the statutes don't necessarily confer the ability to gain jurisdiction after the age of 18, given the definitions of what a juvenile is, and then also given the positioning of jurisdiction as the ability to continue jurisdiction until 19 versus the ability to gain jurisdiction. Now, it's more couched. There isn't a lot of language on when jurisdiction can be gained necessarily past the age of 18 in that buffer zone of 18 to 19. However, there is certainly language that talks about the ability to continue jurisdiction until the age of 19. So I can certainly see a world where the way that the statutes are written and the way that this court has positioned itself in State v. Pauley versus, say, State v. Burris that the Court of Appeals put out, where you look not at the person's age at the time of the offense, but rather by his or her age at the time that they are charged with the offense, well, isn't the inquiry to a degree, the next logical step or next logical conclusion when jurisdiction can be gained over that person in juvenile court. And I think that that's where a lot of our questions in this argument starts to center.
Well, the statutes, I'm going to go ahead and say, are confusing.
Okay, yeah, I would agree.
And with Mr. Porto, I was saying there's some opportunities here, you know, to say jurisdiction is or can be acquired at the time of the offense, or maybe at the time of the charge, or maybe at the time of the motion to transfer, or maybe when the transfer is ordered, right?
Yes.
There's some language that could support some of that.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
So what are we to do?
Well, I think that based on the current read of the statute, I think that it, quite frankly, does not favor the ability to gain jurisdiction after the age of 18, the way that it is currently constructed, and the way that the language in Parks getting into something like Pauley, barring, you know, State v. Burris, that the Court of Appeals put out, I think that that lends support and credence to that logical extension of when you can gain jurisdiction versus when you can continue it and maintain it.
Even if that's right, though, don't we have to decide what the relevant point is when jurisdiction is gained?
Right, right. That is problematic. And I was trying to think about that in terms of when someone is officially charged with an offense. Is it a charge with an offense in the district court? Is it charged with the offense in the separate juvenile court or the county court? That is a question. I think I don't have a great answer for it based on the way that everything is laid out in front of us. But I think that it is probably more in favor of the ability to continue jurisdiction after 18 up to 19 and not necessarily gain it at age 18 based on the way that things are currently written. Now, a ruling by this court could put some meat on the bones of that skeleton by quite a bit. I think that the legislature obviously could do quite a bit of work here. I know that, yes, exactly. And I think that honestly, you know, what you're probably pointing to is if you're trying to establish, if the intent was to establish some sort of buffer zone in between 18 and 19, maybe a larger buffer zone would perhaps be helpful. But
the arraignment statute, the 29-18-16, has a pretty snappy timetable, right?
It seems to.
But you have to advise the individual when the appeal can go up, it's denominated final, everybody's supposed to be expeditious. It's intended to compress in view of the, I think, recognition of the limited time frame of the availability of juvenile service.
I would agree, and it definitely sets a lot of those things out. But if I'm remembering correctly, there's also interpretations from this court that is not a jurisdictional statute, that's a procedural statute, which kind of gets away a little bit from the problem that we have here. And I guess to a certain point even, my mind sort of goes to, is this really about the district court and the ability for them to, I mean, a more narrow view of this is it about the district court and their ability to create jurisdiction after 18, or is this more an appellate issue if, in this case, is this court or is an appellate setting capable of conferring jurisdiction in an appellate setting for that, in order to grant that relief based on
right.
the statute.
But here's another one that's in play, which is 43246.01 parens 3 and C, which provides that the juvenile court has concurrent original jurisdiction with the county court or the district court as to any juvenile described within blah, blah, 29-18-16. Does that kind of, I want to say, jurisdictionalize 29-18-16? Does it give it a weight?
Or is it a descriptor? Not to be too, I don't know if glib is the word necessarily, but I mean, if this court says so, based on the prior readings.
This is an earnest question.
Yeah. And also, I guess at the same time, I don't have an earnest answer, I guess, given some of these conflicts and given
yes.
the way that some of this stuff is constructed. And I'm not sure if that's the product of ad hoc statutory construction or different sort of priorities at different times and not necessarily consulting across the statutory lines and chapters. That certainly sounds like it's at least able to lend some credence to my opposing counsel's argument?
Well, at some point, as Justice Castle mentioned a few minutes ago, would you like to proceed to the merits?
Sure. It's for the merits of Mr. Cardenas' appeal. The state submits that the record contained adequate evidence and testimony to support the district court's decision to retain him in district court. The severity of the facts involved is a first-degree sexual assault, a Class 2 felony. The offense included violence, motivation being that of sexual gratification. There was no other real explanations provided here. The slim timelines were pointed out by the court. I think that's probably one of the main features on display here. Testimony that
Mr. adjudication... Mr. Porto says that the district court put the burden on Mr. Aldana Cardenas rather than the state. What is your response to that?
My response to that would be that the record makes clear that the state put on evidence and put on testimonial evidence, or at least through cross-examination of witnesses, established that the adjudication placement and completion of treatment might, under only the best of circumstances, be able to meet this timeline. I don't think that the state is necessarily required to put out evaluations or, check for bed space or do a lot of the legwork in order to make sure that, to show that yes or no, this, air traffic control has cleared this person to land as far as getting treatment services within the next 6 weeks or something like that. But the state did put on evidence, did elicit testimony that discussed the problems with and the timelines involved in trying to establish a treatment regimen for someone. And this is, this is pre-transfer, pre-adjudication, even if you transfer to juvenile court, we're not even, dealing with pretrial motions or anything like that that could end up extending the timelines. And I think a lot of that is communicated through that testimony during the hearing. There's also the lack of prior history as both a plus and minus, only a short time in the country with little information confirming his past. He came here from Cuba when he was 17, and I think had only been on the ground for a couple of months before this incident was reported. The evidence and testimony suggesting that supervision beyond the short time left on the juvenile clock would likely be necessary is also present as a part of the state's case. Those facts are in the face of a few mitigating factors, and the state acknowledges some of those mitigating factors, but overall the state would submit the decision to retain is not evidence of an abuse of discretion given the record in this case, absent even the mootness jurisdictional issues that the state has raised. If there are no further questions, the state would submit on those points and those in its brief.
Thank you very much. I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal. There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in State versus Aldana Cardenas. So thank you very much, and you are excused. The next case of the day, then, is Boone River, LLC versus Miles.